So I'm going to introduce our speaker. This is Tony. He's Marsha's son, and he's here to talk about financial planning.
Sure, that works.
Yeah, Tony, I'm Liz. It's nice to meet you.
All right, good morning. I think it's from the looks of things, we have a little bit smaller group than we normally do, which I think is good, because I want as much interaction as possible on this riveting topic of personal finance. When I told my wife that I was going to be presenting to a Moms Connect group, she just put her head in her hands and said, please don't talk about budgeting and, you know, saving for retirement and all the stuff that makes everyone check out. So I promise that's going to be like a very, very small portion of what we do today. I want to spend a lot of time talking about the behaviors that we have around personal finance. What do we talk, how do we talk about money at home? How did we get raised talking or maybe not talking about money? Was it taboo? Was it something that was shared and discussed and talked about? And then what do we want to be true about our little ones when they get older from a finance perspective? What are characteristics that we want to be true about their lives? And how do we start to make sure that that happens? What do we put in place and implement at home to give them the right characteristics to grow up with that? So that's the majority of what I want to spend the time talking about this morning. But before I do that, I'll show you a little bit of background about me and where I come from. So some of you guys might know this if you talk to Marsha, but this is a little bit about my background. So I was born and raised in Southern California in the beautiful city of Los Angeles, City of Angels. But similar to some of the people I talked about with property taxes and high property prices, there was an earthquake in the mid-90s, and Marsha said, we're getting out of here. We're not staying in Southern California. So as a kid, to move from the beaches of Los Angeles to the cornfields of Indiana was difficult, to say the least. But we moved to Indiana in the mid-90s, and I went to high school, and I went to college at Indiana University in Bloomington. So I'm a Hoosier at heart. We used to have a good basketball team, but we don't anymore. But this is one of my passions. And I studied finance at Indiana University. I grew up in a home that always talked about finance and personal finance. My dad has been a financial advisor for 35 years. So for us, it was just ingrained in how I grew up and what we talked about. So majoring in finance almost felt like it was a done deal. It was going to happen. I still remember when I was five, I have two older siblings. When I was five, my brother was eight, my sister was 11. Our parents said, okay, you're a family of three. You've got $500 this month, how are you going to spend it? And they would put it up on a whiteboard. We had to plan out. Now, I didn't care as a five-year-old, but my sister and brother took this initiative on. So it was talked about, it was discussed, and it was something that was ingrained in us. After I graduated from Indiana, I started working in as a financial analyst for a medical company called Hillrom. So if those of you who have had babies recently, I'm guessing there's a good likelihood that you were on a Hillrom bed to birth your baby with the calf supports and all the glory of what happens in those birthing rooms. You would have been on a bed that I worked on. But the great opportunity they gave me was to move overseas. So in 2011, I got a chance to move to, does anyone know where this is? Yeah. So this is Singapore. And if it looks like something out of like Star Trek or the future, it absolutely is. It's an incredible country. And I had a chance to live there for not long, about 8 or 9 months, but that was my foray into living overseas outside of the United States. And after that opportunity, I had the wonderful opportunity to move to Sydney, Australia. And that's where I've been for the last 8 years, working in corporate finance for first Hillrom and then Philips. So the TV and light bulb company, they've got a huge medical division, and I was doing project finance work for them. But more than work and more than all of that, the best part about moving to Australia was that I got to meet my wife. And this is a picture of us. That's Rowena, Levi in the middle, and Nikolai there on your left. And this was just late last year. So I had the chance to meet her through work, and we had both of the boys for $0 in a very different healthcare system over in Australia. So now I just have to do this for a couple minutes because I have to brag on them. So that's Levi. That's Nikolai. This is Nikolai's normal face if he's happy, if he's sad. This is just Nikolai. He's like the most chill kid, but every once in a while we get him to smile. So they're a whole lot of fun. And then, like most of us now in this room, we moved to the beautiful city of Atlanta from Sydney. So most people look at me and say, why in the world did you move from Australia to back to the U.S.? My wife, who is Australian, she's Asian background, Chinese background, but she sounds as Australian as you can get, always wanted to live overseas and move overseas. So she was about to go to London in 2008, and then the financial crisis hit everyone in the face, and she said, no, I'm staying put, I'm staying in Australia, which I was very grateful for, because that meant we got a chance to meet. So we moved here in October of 2018, so only about a year and 3 months ago. And as part of that move, I got out of corporate finance and now into personal finance. So my dad, who's now 67, wants to be done working in personal finance. And so we're now in a transition over the last couple of years where he's going to be retiring and I'm taking over his, what they call book of business, or his practice in personal finance. It's something that I was always passionate about, but I always found myself going to a corporate job, but really, you know, listening to podcasts, reading books about personal finance, which makes my wife roll her eyes, but it's what I absolutely love. So what I want to spend some time talking about today is, again, like I said, how did we grow up talking about or not talking about money? What was our upbringing? And we'll have a chance to share amongst the groups. I want to talk about what you see for your children and their futures, for their finances. What type of environment can we create at home for our children with finances? Some really good ideas. If you guys don't know, there's people that have differing opinions about Dave Ramsey's approach. I think he's quite radical with some things, but I think a lot of what he says is absolutely brilliant. And he and his daughter have a book called Smart Money, Smart Kids. And I would highly recommend it. A lot of what we're going to talk about today is some of their ideas around how to raise money-smart children, not just from a real-life perspective, but also from a Christian standpoint and a biblically-based type of approach. And then I want to talk about just some practical tips. Everyone in this room has recently had kids or is going to have more kids. What does that look like from future expenses? How do we plan for college? What's the best way to start thinking about some of those things as new parents? And then just a little bit about the services we provide at Vingelder Financial. So before we do this, normally most speakers don't want you to have your phones out, but I would ask if everyone could take out their phones and go to this website, which is www.menti.com, M-E-N-T-I. And when you get there, you'll be prompted to put in a code. And this is going to be some live interaction that we'll see up on the screen. But if you can put in the code 26997, Menti, M-E-N-T-I.com, and then 26997. And I want you guys to start firing away on the first question, and you can put as many responses as you want and submit it multiple times, and we should, if modern technology works, start to see some of these things pop up around. What do we think about? What are some words that come to mind when we think about money and when we think about finances? Love it. Keep going. If some people say the same word over and over, it'll start to get bigger, so we'll get a feel for, okay, stress. Stress. Stewardship. Boring. That's my wife. She's here in spirit. Enough, budget, income, love it. Okay. Gives me a feel for how we're feeling in the room. I think the key here is the middle word that comes out. Stress, planning, good. Husband. Yeah, that's his role, not my role. Okay. Credit, broke, income. Okay, perfect. All right, That's interesting, because so keep that in mind. If everyone can kind of take a mental picture of what they see up here. Husband just got a lot bigger. Because it's going to be some of the stuff we're talking about in the group. So the next question, which everyone should now be able to have access to, I think. Is this loading for me? If you look at those three statements, how would you rate either from the left side you strongly disagree with the statement or the right side you strongly agree? You should be able to pull kind of a voting bar across that, and we'll get a feel for what people think about these three statements. Was it a taboo topic? After I graduated high school, did I feel equipped to handle it? And the last one, which I always think is interesting, my spouse and I see eye to eye when it comes to finances. All right. Does anyone feel comfortable enough sharing what they would think about some of these? Money was a taboo topic growing up. If someone would say, we'll give three options. If you strongly disagree with that, it was not a taboo topic. Okay? If you, we talked about it some, but maybe I'd put it in the middle. Okay? And then would anyone strongly agree that we just, it was like money, sex, and religion, right? It was, these are the things we don't talk about. Okay? So a few. Did anyone feel really well equipped after high school to handle their finances? One, two, three. Okay. Four. And then who would say strongly disagree that my spouse and I see eye to eye? Oh, great. Okay. My wife put a one, so that shows where I'm up here talking and I should be listening to you guys. Who would say somewhere in the middle? Okay. And who would say strongly agree? Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Great. Number one cause of divorce is money fights and money problems. So you guys, from a room standpoint, that's a good thing. All right, so I want to take some time in your tables, maybe for the next 5 or 10 minutes, and talk about this question. How was money viewed and or discussed growing up? So not necessarily in your households now that you guys are now having and creating families, but with your parents, with your siblings, how was money viewed and or discussed growing up? And then at the end, I might ask a couple people to share some of their thoughts on that. So we had really, really good conversations happening over here at this table. It sounded like you guys were talking away, hopefully about this, but maybe something else. So does anyone feel comfortable sharing some of the ideas? I'd love if, sorry, I didn't get your name. Meredith, if Meredith could share a little bit of her story. And then if anyone else feels comfortable kind of sharing some of the thoughts or feelings, but do you mind kind of speaking up and telling everyone kind of the reality? I mean, if it's not talked about at home, it's changing a little bit, but it's not talked about in high school for the most part. There's no class necessarily. There's starting to get some engagement there, but unless you, I was talking to Vicky earlier, her son's majored in finance, so okay, they got some sort of basic understanding at college, but if you didn't do that, a lot of people then come out of school with a bunch of student loan debt and they don't really know or they don't feel equipped to discuss it or talk about it. So I want to have one more question in terms of discussion amongst your table, and it might sound very similar in terms of some of the themes you just talked about, but now knowing how it was discussed or not discussed growing up, why is money important to you today? And I would encourage you, like if security comes up or, you know, giving comes up, great, but dive a little bit deeper when you're sharing with your table. What does that mean? What does security actually mean? What does it look like? How does it manifest in your life? If it's giving, how does that really truly manifest in your life? So take a few minutes and talk about that amongst your table. Why is money important to you guys today? So I hope that was some good conversation, whether it was around how you were brought up with it or why it's important to you guys today. Rather than going back into your groups and having more discussion, I want this to be really raise your hand, engage, interact, popcorn style. If you guys thought about your multiple children or your one child, depending on your circumstance, and you pictured them, they had graduated college, maybe they didn't go to college, maybe they did something else, but they're working, they're independent. What financial characteristics do you want to be true about their life? And I know it's a little bit strange if they're 6 months old today to think about that, but does anyone feel comfortable? One words, phrases, yep. Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
And I think if
Good. Okay, balance, yep. Yep. Okay.
What?
Excited, love it, yep. Okay. Yep. Knowledgeable, balance, excited to give, prioritizing savings. And then the question is, if that's what we want to be true about the 25-year-old version of our children, like, what are we doing about that? And it might seem a little bit extreme when we talk about balance if they're 6 months old, I get that. But what are we doing, or what do we plan to do to make sure that doesn't just isn't a hope and a wish and a dream? Well, I really hope that they get that from high school, or maybe they'll find a good group of friends, or someone else will handle that. Like, what are we going to do in our households for our children so that it isn't just a hope and a wish and a dream? What are some practical things we can think about? Now, before I get into that, this is my opinion, right? Everyone has different approaches, but it's just a discussion that I want to have. So if you guys have different ideas, or you feel comfortable sharing, please do so. But these are some things that I've seen in either clients' families work really well, or started to see even working with our oldest son, who's 4.5 now, is thinking about raising them in a few different stages. So for us, our 1.5-year-old, we're not really thinking or talking about finances with, obviously. But our 4.5-year-old, we started this year thinking about and talking about, what does a work schedule look like for him around home? Up on our fridge, I should have brought a picture of it, we have kind of 6 weeks, and we have different chores, work. I like to call it work because it feels like they're doing something that's responsible, and they've got their big boy pants on, and they feel a part of what's happening, rather than chores, which is like I have to do my chores. So just that, even that little thing has been a big change in our household. Calling it his work, he feels proud of it, he shows it back to us once he's done, it's been a real game changer, rather than calling it chores, even though I use the word chores in the next point. But focus on basic things, right? So we're not having our 4-year-old mowing the lawn or doing something crazy, but he has things on his schedule, like setting the table or cleaning off the table after dinner. We have a bunch of shoes by our front door. He straightens the shoes. That's one day that's his work. Maybe the next day he wipes down the bathroom mirrors because he loves spraying the Windex. Like, the amount of Windex he puts on our windows is enough for 10 windows. But the point is here, you're also not nitpicking their work, right? You're praising them. You're saying, wow, like, how good, buddy. Great job on what you did, even if it looks like not so good. Make it fun. Interact with them. Talk to them about how good it looks. These are things that he's just exploded in terms of. No joke, he comes home from school now, and he's like, Daddy, what's my work tonight? What do I get to do tonight? And then at the end of the week, we connect, and this is something my parents didn't do, but I really like it, and I firmly believe in it, to not just give him an allowance. Like, if he didn't do his work, he doesn't get his commission. He doesn't get his allowance that week. Now, he's 4, so we have grace, and we're talking about it, and we understand it, but he's got 5 things to do Monday through Friday. If he does them all, on Sunday, we sit down and we say, here's 5 $1 bills, very similar to what, was it Meredith? What you guys have done. We have plastic cups that he has set up in his room, so we don't have piggy banks because we want him to see it. Like, the thing with a piggy bank a lot of times is you don't see it. Once you've dropped in coins or cash, you don't see what's actually going on in there. And we have give, save, and spend. And so now, every week on Sunday, we sit down, we look at his work schedule. Maybe if he did 4, he gets 4 $1 bills. And we talk about, where's the first dollar going in this commission this week? It's going in the give cup. And then on Sundays, when we go to church, we talk about Tim, who's the only kid in his toddler class doing this right now. He takes it in and gives it to his teacher, but he feels like he's doing his tithing, right? He's participating now. Again, he's got his big boy pants on, and he's starting to get the idea that not everything that comes into me is something I go and spend money on. The other thing I would say here is, when they want to, so we have give, sorry, we have save, maybe that's another $1 or $2 he gets that week, and then we have whatever's left is his spend. Don't criticize what they want to spend their money on, right? At this age, the other week he had $3 saved up, And he wanted to buy this bag of chips. And I was just like, really, buddy? Like, we get chips all the time at the store. Like, do you really need another bag of chips? But I said, yep, let's do it. He handed over the money to the cashier. He got, I don't know, 25 cents of change. And he came home. The first thing he did this with my wife. He came running in showing me this bag of chips that he had just bought with his money. So, but don't be, you know, don't think about, well, but that's not what you should be spending your money on. The idea here is we're getting the basic foundation in place of giving, saving, and spending. My thought, my recommendation around this age is we're seeing a lot of uptake on this. We talked a little bit about that when he was, you know, just turning 4, 3 and a half, and it wasn't really getting anywhere, which is fine. But for us, it kind of started right around this age. But what does that look like when they're 8, 10, 12? How should those conversations start to change? And now I'm not speaking from personal experience, but just experience either talking to my parents or other clients and family that we interact with on a daily basis who are our clients in our practice. Oh, does anyone have? Maybe for the sake of time, we'll keep going. Picture the two, like, 8 and 10-year-old kids up on the screen. So we're continuing lessons around connecting their work on a scheduled basis with money or with their commission at the end of the week. But now think about ways to maybe increase the responsibility of those chores. So a lot of times, especially even if you haven't been changing those up, when they're 4, 5, 6, and 7, they get bored with their work if it's the same all the time, just like we get bored if we're working in a corporate job doing the same thing for multiple years, right? So they're humans just like we are. How can we keep it fresh? So we're increasing the responsibility. Maybe it's now helping to wash the car. Maybe it's helping with dinner, putting in some of the ingredients and starting to think about how they contribute to dinner. Raking leaves, maybe not mowing depending on the age, but if you're comfortable with that, mowing the yard. And starting to up not only the responsibility, but then the tangible output of that work. They can see it, they feel proud of it, and you're engaging with them. But I also think it's important not just with the work and the money, but you're starting to have conversations around money with them. You're still monitoring their give and their save and their spend, but you're talking with them about maybe what do you want to save for? Maybe it's not now just spending on quick little things like a bag of chips, but what's something you really, really want? Do you want a new, you know, Nintendo game, if that's even still going to be around? Do you want the VR headset, if we're comfortable with that? Or what are some things that you want to save for? And it might be a little bit more money, but that they can have and start to see what delayed gratification looks like and feels like. But I think it's important too that you're not just expecting that at 4, 5, and 6 they got all the lessons, and you're not helping to stay close with them on however you want to set up those three buckets. You're talking with them about it every week. You're still thinking and maybe having discussions about, hey, on Sunday, what are you going to take out of your give? What are you going to maybe do as an option outside of just church and tithing? So maybe your give has more than 10% of what you made that week. What are some ways you can start to give back that is not just tithing, but you can start to see a real tangible benefit? Is it going down and helping with your time? Is it giving money to, you know, something they're passionate about or they start to hear about or think about? So in these ages, you're just trying to increase some of those conversations and responsibilities. I think it's different for any kid. I think at this point, we aren't focusing on saving, at least in this respect, for his long-term expenses like education or college. That's something we're thinking about and talking about as parents. But it's saving for things that he wants, but maybe it's 6 months from now, not next week, right? So you're starting small, because I think if we're saving and it's their money and we're talking about college, like, we've lost them because now I never got to spend my savings. Like, this is no fun. So again, maybe it's not something that's $5, but maybe $15 or $20 that they have to work a few weeks for or months for, and then they're going out and buying. I mean, if your kids are like my kids, there's always different purchases or things that they think they want and see. And an interesting story that my sister had with my mom is that they were doing this when we were growing up. And she was 6 years old, and she really wanted this like Polly Pocket. I can't even remember what it was called, but it was like, I need to have this thing, right? And so my mom said they went, they got it. She had saved up like 6 months. She got home with this Polly Pocket. I think it was like a surf shop. She sets it all up, and there's all these little trinkets and things. They're constantly falling down, or me as the little brother knocked over something. And she's getting so frustrated with the Polly Pocket that she saved for so long for. And my mom said never again after that, when she wanted to save up for something, did she go in and buy it right away. She always thought, you know what, like, I saved for that whole time. I thought I wanted this Polly Pocket thing, and now, I don't know, it was something else. Maybe I don't need it now. Like, I remember what that was like to save and put all my hard-earned money towards something. But that's huge, right? Like, because it might be a $20 mistake for Polly Pocket, but it wasn't a $10,000 mistake on a car or on student loans or whatever it might be. So, right. So I think, I don't know if that answered your question, but saving for short-term things that they're going to have fun seeing the rewards or reaping the benefits of. So when, for instance, when they're 8 or 10, what I've seen work really well is maybe we're starting to have a couple buckets of savings. So maybe we'll have a bucket of savings because they're starting to earn more that is for short-term things. You know, it's not Polly Pocket, but maybe it's whatever is a little bit more mature than that. And then maybe a different bucket is now thinking about car, saving for a car when I'm 15 or 16. If you get $1,000 saved up, mom and dad are going to match that, right? Or maybe we'll do a match of 50% of what you have saved for a car. So we're having different buckets of savings, just like now as adults, we might be saving for multiple things at the same time, so that they still get some of that short-term gratification, but they also see the benefit of something, the numbers going up, which is kind of fun as well. So, all right, well, the next slide. Yes. Mm-hmm. We control my wife being Chinese, in the Asian culture, when you have a kid, like, red pockets come flying in left, right, and center from relatives you've never met and all these people. We got like $2,500 when he was born from just random family members. He's never seen, nor does he know about it, but we, on an Excel spreadsheet, have kept track of, in our savings account, what is Levi's money. Now, I don't know what the perfect age for that is, but at some point, we're going to talk to him about that's his, and maybe we'll pick an idea for leaving that in cash savings for a car, but maybe some of that will be invested savings in stock or in mutual funds that he can see grow and use later in life. But right now, if it's significant stuff coming in like that, he isn't aware of it, but we're keeping track of that separately. Yeah, I would. I mean, again, this is my opinion, so there's different, but yes, if it's something small like that, but again, it's not just here's $10, it's splitting up again, just like your commission that week, okay, whatever comes in, right, we're going to give some, we're going to save some, we're going to spend some, so. It's a little bit like, for instance, because we were doing $5 if he does all of his chores. Well, we're going to pick $1, which is 20%. So, okay, he's an overachiever. But, like, rather than putting two coins, right, and getting perfectly to 10%, I'm not so worried about the perfect math. It's the idea. It's the training. It's the idea that we're giving something that comes into us. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about exactly 10%. I think that's something that we might talk about as he grows older, that, hey, tithing is 10%, but giving doesn't have to be just tithing, right? So 20% might be great. Maybe half of that is your tithe and the other half is things you...
You're working on it.
Okay.
Maybe it could tie in with when they start
adding percentages. Yeah. Yeah. The old pizza pie cut-ups, fractions and percentages. Oh. You got life.
You should be good. That's yours.
Yeah, but let me try. Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. Thank you so much. All right, so then, not the final stage, because I don't think it should ever stop. Like, even as an adult, I talk to, well, mainly because I'm working with my dad around personal finance, but I'm still talking to my parents or people that I trust in my life around money. But this is now, think of it kind of maybe 15, 16 through high school. What are some things we should start to shift in these conversations? My personal opinion, I am going to highly encourage both of our boys to go find employment when they're of the right age, right? So now the things that they help with around the house are because they're part of the house, not because that's their commission, right? So this is a household you've grown up in. You're going to give back to that by helping around the house, and we're not necessarily paying you an allowance or commission anymore a week because you've got a job. Now, jobs might look very different to my four-year-old than they did when I was growing up at McDonald's or whatever it was at the end of the day, but encourage some sort of employment, or highly encourage if they've got a great idea that's entrepreneurial. Hey, I'm going to go around the neighborhood and rake everyone's leaves, and if I get paid for that, great. For me, it was shoveling snow. So I grew up in Indiana. We got a lot of snowstorms. I would go over, and I would knock on the door, and I would say, do you mind if I shovel your driveway? No. Do you want anything? I said, no, whatever you feel comfortable with, right? Which usually meant I got more than if I would have asked to be paid. But encourage that, right? If it's the typical lemonade stand, encourage that. And if it's really disappointing, talk about it. Like, maybe they didn't get what they thought they were going to get from it. Why? What would you do differently next time? Like, we're starting to have really much more adult conversations around not only the money coming in, but how they're working. I would encourage you guys to think about, at this stage, bank accounts that have co-signed information on them, so you as the parent can see it and can help them talk about what's coming into that. And then debit cards. You can get credit cards before 18. I would not encourage it, but at this stage, we're thinking about and talking about how we're using the debit card, because it's what we have in the account to spend, and we're seeing what it feels like for the first time to swipe a card and not hand over cash, which is a really, really different feeling. If you think about it from this perspective, I had someone say this to me one time. When you pay cash, let's say something was $5 and you hand over a $5 bill, what do you get back? You get nothing back. When you pay with card, mentally you're getting that back in your hands. After you hand it over or you swipe it yourselves, you're getting it back. We spend, on average, 37% more when we use cards than when we use cash. Now, is that always realistic in this day and age? No, I hardly use cash, but it's good to be aware of the fact that it's so much easier, and in the days of Amazon, to do it online without even using a swipe of a card, but just typing something in. So this is interesting to think about and talk about with them, is that now they're not using cash because they've gone off the, quote, commission system, but they're maybe using a debit card. Right. Yeah, it's an option. That, again, this is personal preference. I'm going to encourage that they use debit cards up until, if they want to make that call when they're 18 and they're talking about it or they've seen us use it and we're talking about how that works, that it's going to feel different, that you can spend what's not in your account. Secured is different, obviously. So I'm open to that idea, but for us, I mean, again, we're not that at that stage, but we've talked about that we would only have credit cards once they are 18. This is another big one. Involve them in the money decisions you're making, right? Are you saving for something, whether it's a car to replace that you don't necessarily want to have a loan for or get another lease for? What are you saving so you can pay cash for something? Or maybe you're not, or maybe you're disagreeing with your husband and wife. Within reason, have that be something that's an open discussion, that they can see that it can be talked about and a discussion can be had. Even a non-eye-to-eye type of discussion where there's a small disagreement can be had, but that we can come back together and find a common ground and move forward with some sort of purchase that they see and experience themselves. The other thing, which I think is tough even as parents to keep in mind, but start to focus the conversation with them about contentment and gratitude. So they're going to have friends that are going to be starting to make money. They're going to have friends' parents that are making a lot more money than you are or a lot less money than you are. And there's going to be all sorts of comparisons, obviously, through high school that we all went through, but especially around where you go to college, if that's something that your children are going to do. I was talking a little bit about this with this group, the keeping up with the Joneses that I'm seeing compared to my parents, it used to be more square footage or a bigger SUV. And I feel like that's changing a little bit. I don't think, yeah, there is still some of that, especially when you get OTP in Atlanta, you get bigger houses. But being inside the perimeter where we are near Emory, like that's not something that's a big pull for people to get more square footage or to get a bigger car. But where they go to school, man, I'm comparing all day long, like, ooh, Sally and Tommy went to Georgia Tech, so shouldn't my kid? Or they went to some Ivy League school, maybe we should be thinking about for our kid. And it puts so much pressure as well on the children that they've got to perform or live up to some standard. So be aware that this is also something you guys are dealing with potentially at that stage, is keeping up with the Joneses of their future and trying to live vicariously through their lives, because maybe it wasn't something you experienced growing up. So be careful with that and talk to them about those topics. Okay, I want to spend a little bit of time. We have, how much time do we have until 11:30? Okay. Talking about just some practical ideas around planning for their education. So some of you guys might be at very different stages with this. Some of you might have relatives that have put money away and you're set. Some of you might have zero, or maybe you're somewhere in the middle. Before, and I would highly encourage you guys to have a conversation with your spouse about this. Before you think about saving for their education, make sure, and it sounds selfish, but make sure you guys are taking care of your retirement or your future first. We've seen a lot of times where people put all the money away that they have towards their kid's education. Their kid graduates, they didn't save for their retirement, and they have to turn right around and start taking care of mom and dad because they didn't take care of themselves. So I honestly feel it's a way of also loving your children, that you're securing your future, that they don't have to worry about or think about that in turn for you. So before putting money away for their future education, I would at least start to be automating or talking about on a monthly basis putting money away for retirement. That could be 401k at work, that could be IRAs outside of work, but make sure you guys have had a conversation, or if you're working with an advisor already or professional that's giving you that guidance, that you're doing this on a regular basis. If that's the case, and a lot of you guys already know some of these things, but elements of a debt-free education, don't just assume that student loans are going to be how we have to pay for if they want to go to higher education. Family support can be in the form of a lot of different things. 529 plans are probably the most common thing that people heard about, at least. Every state has a different 529 plan. There's a Georgia 529 plan. There's Virginia, New York, Virginia, California. Every state has their own 529 plan. You can pick any state's 529 plan for your kid. They don't have to go to that state for school. So a lot of people get mixed up on this, like, do I have to do the Georgia one? No, you don't have to. The benefit of if you do the Georgia 529 plan is that a portion of what you put into that plan each year is tax deductible. So that's the real key, is that, okay, maybe Georgia makes sense from a tax deductible standpoint, but maybe what they allow you to invest in is really restricted. It's only these types of things that they let you invest in. The menu of options is not very large. So I'm going to go with New York, even though I don't get the tax deduction, because I believe that what I'm allowed to put my money away into is something that's more viable long term. 529 plans can also be used before college. They can be used for secondary education, high school, private high school education. So you might not be starting this and only having an 18-year runway if you have a newborn. Maybe it's a 14-year runway, or some of it is for high school, some of it is for college. If your first kid that you have a 529 plan for doesn't use it, you can transfer it to the second kid, to a cousin, to a family member outside of an immediate family member. So 529 plans are really, really flexible. Yep. Yeah, 100%. Or you could start it in your name if you don't yet have the child yet. This is another kind of thing to think about. Maybe you want to start something for the third child, but they're not born yet, so they don't have a social number. You can start one for you and transfer it to them when they are born, which is a good way to think about it as well. With ESA accounts, very similar, but they're income restricted. The difference used to be that ESAs could be used for high school, so people liked that if they wanted another option. 529 plans have opened the door to that, so we're seeing less and less people put money away in ESA accounts, which is education savings accounts, but those have some tax benefits as well. Another thing, if you guys are convinced that You don't want to put money away into an education account if it's never going to be used for education, because the 529 and the ESEA has to be used for education. Otherwise, when you pull the money out, you'll have not only tax, but a penalty you pay on those withdrawals. There's an extra 10% penalty if it's not used for education. So Roth IRAs and IRAs should definitely be something you're thinking about for retirement. But just if that's something that's a part of your guys' life, if you or your husband have a Roth IRA, that can be used penalty-free before retirement age for education for your children. So it's another option and avenue that now I'm not earmarking it definitely for education, but I've known that I've got, I don't know, 50,000 or 100,000 here for multiple kids that if they need it, great, but if they don't, it's still sitting in my retirement. It's not locked up in that 529 that has to be used for education. Again, encourage part-time work. So you can do a lot for the child, but I would highly encourage you, especially if you've been doing some of these teaching in stages, you know, 4, 5, 8, 10, and what we talked about today, make them be a part of paying for that. Whether it's through part-time work, whether it's not even through part-time work, but you make scholarship applications part of their part-time work, is a really, really good way to do this. There's a story of a client of ours, single mother. Her daughter, when she was in 10th grade, every Saturday, took an hour out of her day to do scholarship applications. Anything and everything, even if she didn't think she was going to get it, she did scholarship applications. And when she graduated, she had $500,000 in scholarships to use. And she was, now granted, single mother, so she might have had exposure to some scholarships that, you know, a household with a mother and a father wouldn't have exposure to. But I mean, that's going to pay more than any part-time work that they're doing in high school. Make it something that you do on a consistent basis. You start getting essays written, you can do a lot of copying and pasting for scholarship applications, right? So I would highly encourage you guys to think about that, to look into that. There's websites all over the place that show you all the different scholarships available, not only specific to Georgia, but across the U.S. Look into that. And again, coming back to keeping up with the Joneses, talk about education choice. Where are you going to go to college? Why do you want to go there? Is that the right spot for you to go? Ever since I've graduated, after the first job, no one's asked me where I went to school, right? So think about where you're sending them to college and encourage them to go where they want to go, but make sure it's for the right reasons. Lifestyle choice, final point. If you take out loans, this is something I see all the time. We specialize in helping people with significant student loan debt as part of our practice. People don't think about the fact that if I'm taking out student loans and I bought a Chipotle burrito today for lunch, which was $7.50, that by the time I pay off this loan, at the end of all this, because you can finance not only your tuition, but your room and board and some of your living expenses, that Chipotle burrito cost me over $40 because of interest and the time it took me to pay it off. So think about as well, if student loans are going to be part of how they're going to pay for college, that how they're living in college makes a big difference. So it's how much loans and interest they're going to pay off over the long run. Because if you don't plan and think about it, this is where we sit today, and I'm sure many of us see stats or hear presidential candidates say that they're going to wipe it out, but $1.6 trillion now in student loan debt. So in 2010, it passed credit card debt. So mortgages are number one in the U.S., student loan debt is second. It's the second largest debt in America. Average debt for someone that comes out, not just from undergraduate, but they went for a professional degree afterwards, is anywhere between $42,000 for MBA students and $160,000 on average for doctors, lawyers, etc. 20% of people are late in some form or fashion. They're either in default, which means they've missed up to 9 months of payment, or they're delinquent, they've missed at least one payment. This has been a real eye-opener for me. When I got a specialization in student loan management, I thought I was really going to be targeting like 20 to 40 in terms of the age range. The fastest growing age range for student loan debt is 60 and above. And it's for two main reasons. You've had 11 years of an incredible market. People feel emboldened by low unemployment, and they're late career changers. So they've been with a company for 25, 30 years. Maybe they lost their pension because pensions are underfunded, and they go back to study culinary arts or whatever it may be that there was their passion, which is great, but they rack up student loan debt to do it. Or the parents didn't save for college. They can't stand the thought of little Susie going to college with her own student loan debt, so I'm going to take loans out in my name as a parent plus loan and pay for their college. Right? Not thinking about what that means to my retirement or other things I'm going to have later in life. So it's not just a young person's problem. And then since 1987, for a whole host of reasons, we've had ridiculous increases in the price of tuition. One of the main reasons was that state funding dried up after the global financial crisis. So the state coffers that used to be able to help public institutions in Georgia and all over the U.S. had funds to do that. That ran out when the stock market crashed. And so how are they funding it? They increase tuition, or they're competing to bring in the best professors that they pay more, and the cost of college has increased 500% since I was a kid. So outside of just general education type of tips and saving for that, some of you guys might look at this and say, well, I have it all in order. Great. But just some things to think about, especially around being in the stage of a new parent. When we work with people that are single, we don't even bother talking about life insurance. Not because we don't think it's important at some point in their life, but if, sounds terrible, but if they pass, they don't have anyone depending on them. But now that you've got little ones around home, I would highly encourage you guys to think about, if you haven't already, what type of life insurance do we have in place? Not just on the working spouse, right? Because if you guys, any of you are staying at home, there's a value to that. If you're not there, where are the kids going to go? That's going to cost a lot of money. So think about that, not just from a working spouse perspective, but are we set up at least until maybe they're in college, right? So do we get a 20-year term policy at the right amount of money that we could pay off a house or pay for daycare if one of us were to pass? If you haven't already, start talking about it at least on a monthly basis. And if it's not a full-blown budget where you've planned out what's going to come in, what's going to go out, start tracking your expenses. So maybe you don't create a budget the first 3 months, but there's apps all over the place. Good Budget is a great app that has envelope systems built in. It's free. You can do up to 10 envelopes for free, and it's shared. So when my wife spends money, she puts in her coffee. When I spend money for gas, I put in, and you can see it as a couple starting to go down and seeing how much you have left that month or how much you've spent that month. If you're new to it, I would encourage you guys to give yourself grace for 3 months. So don't talk to the spouse about, why'd you spend that? We only plan for this. Like, we're just starting to get used to this. We don't know how much we're spending in all these different categories. Give yourself a 3-month grace period to just start tracking your expenses and see where you're spending your money if you haven't budgeted already. And I would encourage you guys with little ones around to increase, if you have one, an emergency fund. So this is something that should not be invested and have the risk of going up and down in the stock market. Maybe it's in cash. Maybe it's in short-term bonds or a CD, but it's money we do not touch. We make a pact. It's for emergencies. Let's talk about what we define as an emergency, right? Like, Christmas is not an emergency. What are we spending? And I would encourage you guys, this is very Dave Ramsey-esque, to go from 3 months up to 6 months when you have little ones at home. So when I say 6 months, if you start tracking your expenses and you're spending $3,000-$4,000 a month, well, 6 months of an emergency fund looks like $20,000 to $25,000 that we're not touching. It's over here in an emergency fund that we use and only pull on if we have an emergency. No cap. In fact, if you're going to have another child, I would say it's one of the few times that I would just chunk as much money as you can away in the emergency fund. Once little baby's born, there's no complications, drop it back down to 3 to 6 months. I don't think there's... It comes down to personal risk preference. Like, I don't see much of a reason to have more than 6 months, because you can then start to use that to grow if it's invested correctly. But maybe if you have a spouse that's in contract work or has a lot of variability in income, you talked about when you were growing up, you had a lot of variability in your income. That's where I would err maybe 6 to 9 months, but 6 months is usually quite a bit for most people. Just make sure, I'm not a tax professional, if you've got a CPA or someone that knows taxes, make sure you're taking advantage of the tax breaks as a parent. Child tax breaks, child care tax breaks, after you obviously you can see that you're eligible for them, but just make sure and be aware that they are out there for new parents. Prioritize your retirement before you think about their education. It feels selfish, but I honestly see it as an act of love back to them. Save for college as early as possible. And this is a big one too. Even if you had a will, maybe you got married, you guys got a will, but now you've had children. Well, we need to update that, right? What do the beneficiaries look like? What do our powers of attorney look like? Yep. You can. So we've written it in to be split up evenly across our children. So vague enough that if we had one, it's 100%. If we had two, it's 50, and so on. It gets when it comes to like guardianship. To be honest, I would say talk to an estate attorney because I don't know the details. But I would assume that if one child's not named and the other is, that the state would see the reasonableness of having them both be part of the same guardian household. But I don't know. If any time you have a major life change, which is going to change your beneficiary, then that's how often, right? So some people, they do it once because they have one kid and they're set and they don't change it. So it's, yep. So again, it's going to sound like I worship at the altar of Dave Ramsey, but he's got a great website with a lot of helpful tools in that regard, with suggestions for each category. So as an example, your mortgage or what you have for your household should be 25% of your take-home pay, roughly, give or take. You should be saving 15% towards your retirement. So he's got a lot of that broken out. I would say that's a great place to start, DaveRamsey.com, at least to get an idea roughly of what makes sense. Okay, this is a final one that I love to show. This is going to be like the final one that I nerd out on, but just bear with me because I think this is amazing. So the reason I push it so much to start somewhere when it comes to your personal savings, whether it's retirement or something else you're saving for, is because of compound interest. I know we all hear about it, but this I've always found this to be an amazing visual. So Jason doesn't look 22, but pretend he is. So Jason at 22 decides, okay, I graduated college. I'm going to be up on this, and I'm going to start putting money away every month. I'm going to save $500 a month between age 22 and 32. All right, so for 10 years, he puts away $500 a month. That's $60,000 overall that he's put away. $6,000 a year for 10 years. But life happens at 32. He got married. He had a kid. There just wasn't money in the budget, so I stopped. Now, I want to still retire at 65, but between 32 and 65, I did nothing else. Erica, on the other hand, graduated, and she was one of those crazy millennials that everyone likes to stereotype, and she went and lived for a while. So between 22 and 32, she traveled. She worked odd and end jobs. She didn't save. But from 32, she got serious. She met someone, and their story was a little different. They had the money, and they started stocking it away because they saw people in their life that were going to need it, kids, etc. She puts $500 away between 32 and 65. So for 33 years, she's putting away $500 a month. So that's $6,000 a year. That's over $190,000 that she has saved. At 65, they both retire, and this is their balance in their savings. So she has saved $190,000. He's saved $60,000. But because he did it from 22 to 32, he had the power of compound interest. Now, if anyone behind this, or if you took a picture and your husband says, yeah, but what rate of return did he use? We assumed a 7% rate of return, which is lower than historical what you get in the stock market and what we believe to be pretty safe, and this is where they end up. Okay, so it just magnifies the power of starting somewhere. Maybe it's not 500, maybe it's 100. Something that you start to automate. And it's amazing, we've seen, when you force it to happen, it's amazing how you find yourself able to live on what's left that month. You didn't think you could, but we went from 100 to 200, and I didn't really feel it this month, actually. That was kind of crazy. So I would encourage you guys, start somewhere. Because it's amazing what compound interest can do. So we only have a few minutes left. This is just a little bit about what we do. You've seen some business cards on the table. We also have every week a weekly newsletter that goes out to hundreds of readers that you can subscribe to. It's free, and you can unsubscribe to it whenever you want. If you'd like to sign up for it, please do. But we offer comprehensive financial planning where we're sitting down consistently twice a year and revisiting what that comprehensive financial plan looks like for one of our clients. I've been a part of getting financial plans where it's like a 60-page document and then it sat on the shelf, it gathered dust, and we never looked at it again. It felt good for like a week, but then life happened, things changed. So the way we do that is through a monthly subscription model. So we have no asset minimums. A lot of advisors are going to say, unless you've got 100,000, 500,000, or a million, we're not working with you. We have no minimums because we offer a lot of this through a monthly subscription type of model. Just like your gym membership or your Netflix or your Spotify, why not your financial planning? Investment management is part of that. Do you start to have funds from an old 401k that you don't know what to do with, or an IRA? Income planning, so a lot of our clients are in a stage of life, 60 and plus, that they are retiring. How do I actually feel comfortable starting to pull from something that I've only saved for 30 years? It's this weird thing that happens that they've gotten so ingrained in their identity, they're a saver, that they can't actually then live when they get to retirement because they don't know how or what that looks like, or they feel guilty. So we help plan income planning for them. Risk mitigation from an insurance perspective, we've got our insurance licenses. We're not compensated by that. We don't push it, insurance and annuities, but if it makes sense for a client, we talk about it. And then college planning is a big one. We talked a little bit about the before today, 529s, ESAs. There are three certified student loan professionals in the whole state of Georgia, and I am one of them that knows the ins and outs of all the different repayment plans and options and deferment and forbearance and refinancing and what that means. And so we work with people with significant student loan debt to help them on a path out of that to start building wealth for their future as well. So that's some of the services we provide. It's a small shop. This is me and my dad, and we've got an office assistant, and that's us. So thank you, guys. That's all I have.